This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. Early lessons for the crypto industry from the big trial underway in New York right now. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The fraud trial of Sam Bankman-Fried, co-founder of bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange FTX and its interwoven trading firm Alameda Research, continues here in New York. Bankman-Fried is facing 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy. If convicted, the penalty could effectively be life in prison. Prosecutors are trying to build the case that Bankman-Fried misused billions of dollars in customer accounts to prop up his businesses. This week, the jury heard from the government's star witness, Alameda's CEO, Caroline Ellison. New York Times technology and crypto industry reporter David Yaffe-Bellany was in the courtroom. He joins us this morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So 2 days of testimony, what did we learn from Caroline Ellison, who I should mention was also an on and off romantic partner of Bankman-Fried? What did we learn about how Alameda, this trading firm, worked with FTX?
This was the most hotly anticipated testimony of the trial for all the reasons that you laid out. You know, she was a key executive in his orbit, and she was also his ex-girlfriend. And we've learned a ton about the relationship between Alameda and FTX. Yesterday, she talked at length about how Sam directed her to essentially create phony balance sheets that she then circulated to companies that were lending Alameda money. And the balance sheets essentially concealed the fact that Alameda was struggling a lot and that it was borrowing money from the FTX exchange from customers to kind of prop up its business.
Lied to lenders. And is it even in dispute that customer money was used to prop up Bankman-Fried's enterprises?
He's essentially been arguing in public is that this was a huge accounting screw-up. He wasn't aware of how much money was being borrowed from the exchange, that because of the way FTX operated, it would have been appropriate for at least some money to have been borrowed, but that this got out of control due to sort of disorganization at the highest levels of the company. I mean, is that a convincing explanation? You know, a lot of people have said it isn't, but we'll probably hear more along those lines as the trial proceeds.
Now, look, the trial's still ongoing, but do you have enough distance to answer this? Do you see emerging lessons here for financial regulators and investors with regards to other crypto exchanges and their trading firms?
I mean, there were red flags all over FTX. It didn't have a risk management team. It didn't have a board of directors. You know, Sam would be on conference calls with investors, you know, pitching them on FTX, and he'd be playing video games at the same time. You know, while FTX was thriving, all of this was painted as sort of a sign that he was smarter than everybody else, that he, you know, was brave enough to do things differently, and that he didn't waste money on kind of useless protocols. But I think what we've learned is that, you know, even in the kind of renegade world of crypto, these sort of lessons from traditional finance still apply. You know, there needs to be somebody who's overseeing things, and, you know, it doesn't make sense to, you know, just trust everybody's money with kind of one charismatic figure.
New York Times technology and crypto industry reporter David Yaffe-Bellany at the courtroom. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
The fresh inflation numbers are in. The headline consumer price index calmed down some, rising just 0.4% in September, but it's more than the headline. My colleague Nancy Marshall-Genzer is looking at the report with economist Diane Swonk.
So, Diane, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, increased a bit more last month than many economists predicted. It was up 3.7% from the same time last year. Was it up a bit more than you expected also?
Well, yes. And I think the most important issue here is that the core services component that the Fed watches so closely, because that's over half of overall inflation in the U.S. economy, that actually accelerated during the month. And that's something very important because the Fed was hoping that those things would be cooling by now.
Right. Of course, the Fed has been raising interest rates in an effort to cool off the economy, lower inflation. So the question is, will they raise interest rates again when they see these inflation numbers? So interesting that inflation is still sticky, mainly in the services sector. Is that mostly because of the cost of labor?
It really is part of the issue. We also saw a big acceleration in employment over the summer. So that's a lot of new paychecks and people were able to step out. Much of the inflation was in the service sector and they're able to step out and step up and spend on services.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at the tax and advisory firm KPMG. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
We're just coming off Amazon's two-day sale, the Autumn Prime Days, and with the big holiday still more than 2 months away, other retailers were doing deals, Target, Walmart, Kohl's included. Why, when it's not even Halloween? Marketplace's Henry Epp explains.
While consumer spending has been holding up, Claire Tassin, retail and e-commerce analyst at Morningstar, says steady inflation, high interest rates, and other factors could lead shoppers to finally pull back.
You have student loan repayments resuming. We have childcare subsidies ending that are all going to put increasing strain on household budgets going into the holiday season.
So retailers want to get shoppers in the door now, says Brian Eshelman, a managing director at Alex Partners.
They're worried that consumers' wallets are shrinking, and so they're trying to grab as much share of that wallet as they can while consumers are still spending.
This strategy comes with some risk. For one, retailers could sell too much during these early sales, says Sucharita Kadali, a retail analyst at Forrester.
They could sell out of like really good merchandise super early, and then they're left with nothing, you know, that's really valuable in November and December when they need to actually be selling.
Retailers could also face some backlash from consumers who just don't want to think about the holidays already, Kadali says. But while some people might complain, others have been holiday shopping since July, says Claire Tassin, who surveys consumers about their shopping habits.
So retailers are really meeting consumers where they are and understanding that holidays give people permission to spend money.
Even if that spending is happening months and months in advance. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
Hey, everyone. It's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work. while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.